Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Special.
Hello.
It is having its last gasp hurrah out there for winter.
Winter is, yes. As we speak, it's hammering down.
And it's blizzardy like in
the drive home in it. Up north, north of Sudbury, that whole area.
Oh, yeah. Like, everything's
they
shut down.
Are isolated. They're calling themselves a winter island because you can't get in or out.
Yeah.
It was like, holy cow. Yeah, there's the guys were talking to friends who were up. His friends were up north of North Bay for a skidoo weekend. And one of the guys said, oh, I'm heading back. He headed back like Sunday at midnight or something. And he got through to North Bay so he could get down south. And everybody else is stranded up there. There's like a group of eight of them doing skidoo stuff. And they're stuck.
But they're on skidoos.
Well, they can't do 800 kilometers.
Why?
Well, because their trucks will still be up there.
And? Gives you an excuse to go up later for a second skidoo trip.
Just get to and from work on my skidoo for the next 2 weeks.
Right? What's wrong with that? That attitude on you, Derek, has got to go. All I'm seeing is, I'm just giving solutions. And you're just problems, problems, problems.
I know.
You need to work on that. It's only 800 kilometers, Derek. Think of the skidoo fun you'd have along the way.
I know. Snow machine. I always call them skidoos because we had a skidoo growing up, so it was always the skidoo.
They'll be skidoos.
But it was a brand skidoo. They're snow machines.
Forever, yeah. Ah, they're skidoos.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's snowing out there pretty good today, and I think this is the last of it.
I hope so.
We tried to get out on the nice sunny day there on the weekend.
Oh,
the winds just would not cooperate.
I saw your vain attempt at photography.
My vain attempt. we went out there. The wind's supposed to settle down in the afternoon. Okay, well, let's go in the afternoon. We'll go out for a paddle. Okay, they're like 1 to 2 meters, all those waves. So what did it settle down from?
I know, right?
So, yeah, those tidal waves are going to settle down from the morning.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, whatever. So they say there was still no paddling this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The river is only open slightly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Not very. We wouldn't have gotten very far up, I don't think so. So we wait.
Yes.
And we wait. And then when we're done waiting, we will wait some more. Something came out there. We've been talking a lot about invasive species.
Yes.
And having to get your boats inspected and all that in different provinces and thingies, states and stuff. Well, now there's a new one.
Yes, and normally when it's the weeds and whatnot, then it's a problem with the weeds. You got to keep clearing the weeds. You got to stop the invasive weeds. But this one here is a bit different. This is a bit more serious.
Yes, Parks Canada is shutting down most backcountry lakes and rivers, along with popular Moraine Lake, Bow Lake, and Lake Minnewanka, all three which I have paddled, in Banff National Park to paddling and other water-based recreation in a move to reduce the threat of aquatic invasive species that can kill native fish populations. Yoho and Kootenay National Parks, all lakes, streams, and rivers remain closed to watercraft and fishing until March 31st, 2027, so that's next year, to reduce the spread of aquatic invasive species like whirling disease. After the deadly fish disease was first discovered in Emerald Lake and several rivers in 2023. And we talked about that back then, too.
Mm-hmm.
Banff National Park, paddling in large inflatables, as well as fishing with waders or wading boots, will be banned at Lake Minnewanka, Bow Lake, and Moraine Lake, effective spring 2026. So now. This includes canoes, kayaks, paddle boards, kite boards, rowboats, inflatable boats, and toys like donuts or unicorns. Donuts are not toys.
And I have weirdly specific... Unicorns, that's weirdly specific.
Right?
So...
However, many of Banff's most popular lakes and rivers remain open to water-based recreation, including Lake Louise, Vermilion Lakes, Johnson Lake, Two Jack Lake, and the Bow River downstream of Hector Lake. Parks Canada officials say whirling disease, which was introduced from Europe and can have a 90% mortality rate in some fish species.
And that's the big concern, 90% mortality rate.
Yep.
That is like, that's wiping out some local species, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, if you have 1,000 fish in the lake,
yeah,
it's 900 of them are gone.
Yeah.
Right?
It's oh.
Confirmed in Lake Louise in 2025 following reports and testing of a fish with deformities. While ecologically important as all headwater lakes are, Parks Canada officials say Lake Louise has no critical habitat for at-risk species like West Slope cutthroat trout or bull trout. It's not is not identified as an important spawning area or migratory route and is not earmarked for future restoration projects. Because of these factors and because we did a water body assessment at Lake Louise, we will allow continued water activities with safeguards in place, says Marie Villard, Aquatic Invasive Species Project Coordinator at Lake Louise.
So they're going to take Lake Louise as a loss. Basically is what they're saying.
Basically, that's what they're saying.
It's not a feeder lake. It doesn't. Yeah. It's a end use lake. So the water there is not going to cause a problem in other downstream lakes. So it's like, okay, we're going to take a loss on this one.
Yep. We've taken a look at visitor use pattern and ecological sensitivity of water bodies in the mountain national parks. And Lake Louise is a very iconic water body in Banff National Park and is very popular for tourists. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can get in there and get a parking spot.
Yes, true. True that.
You know, yeah, you know what? It's very picturesque. People love to get there and take the photos and stuff like that. But still, you gotta protect it.
Mm-hmm.
Whirling disease has already been detected in Banff and Yoho National Parks. However, all 2024 and 2025 test results came back negative for whirling disease in Kootenay National Park, confirming that park remains whirling disease free. Conservationists say Parks Canada is on the right track. These restrictions will directly impact Minnewanka non-commercial users, but most of the easily accessible lakes will still have reasonable access for the public, says Reg Bunyan, a board member and past president of Bow Valley Naturalists. So getting into the backcountry and stuff like that still be an option. Parks Canada is on the right track with closing the majority of the backcountry lakes, particularly those with still intact native trout populations. Those lakes serve as an important biological baseline for monitoring future environmental change. Alberta Whitewater Association has reached out to Parks Canada and is working on providing paddlers feedback and other potential solutions. They are calling on paddlers to write to Parks and their MPs. We'll provide more information once we have talked to Parks, states the association. There's a lot of rivers and stuff that feed into there, and if they're closing it all, that's no whitewater paddling.
True.
Right? Under the new strategy to help prevent spread of aquatic invasive species, with particular focus on whirling disease and zebra and quagga mussels, Banff's lakes and rivers are grouped into three zones. Water recreation zone, water preservation zone, and special tactic zones. Special tactics zones. Each zone has different regulations and permitting requirements for the water activities. Falling into what is called a special tactics zone is Lake Minnewanka, located about 14 kilometers from Banff. Lake Minnewanka has added restrictions with all paddlecraft, fishing waders, and wading boots prohibited, except for motorboats that pass a Parks Canada watercraft inspection and rental watercraft available at the lake shore that do not leave Lake Minnewanka. So yeah, when we were there, we had the option to rent a canoe, but considering we had ours,
yes,
we just went...
Now it might be a better idea to rent.
Now it would be a better idea to rent, so...
And you can see that they're catering their tactics to, it's Lake Tibetan, to do the best protection of each zone.
Yeah. Swimming, playing with beach toys, snorkeling, scuba diving, and fishing without waders or wading boots can continue. The inspection station for motorized boats is located 6 kilometers from the Banff town site along the Lake Minnewanka Loop. Most backcountry lakes, rivers, and streams fall within the water preservation zone. Areas that are prioritized for protection of ecologically sensitive water bodies or areas with limited recreational use. Bow Lake and Moraine Lake are also within the water preservation zone, and while paddling and inflatables and fishing with waders and wading boots are prohibited, playing with beach toys, snorkeling, and fishing without waders or wading boots can continue.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now, they talk about snorkeling and scuba diving. I can't say I've ever known anybody go to scuba diving in any of those.
There is, lakes. And they do mention later on another lake that there. I think there's a couple areas that are known for scuba diving. There must be deeper lakes, normally, like, these are very cold lakes. I can't see and as with anything with these lakes, it's like you have basically brown water, brown rock, brown fish, brown weeds.
Oh, so these lakes aren't though.
It's not that attractive to snorkel in them.
Yeah,
it's not like you would down in like Mexico or whatever. Right?
But these lakes are like. Pure turquoise. Pure,
yeah.
Right? But yeah, I don't know anybody that would... I'm going to the Rocky Mountains to go scuba diving.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the mountains to go scuba diving.
Not words I'd hear in the same sentence. So you can't do that. Villard said Bow Lake has been placed in the water preservation zone to protect critical habitat for species at risk. It is home to bull trout and is located immediately upstream of wet slope cutthroat trout, critical habitat. So yeah, so if it's, you got to keep it out of that habitat, right? Bow Lake has not had any aquatic invasive species detected, so we're trying to protect Bow Lake, which is at the headwaters of the Bow River watershed, from any aquatic invasive species being introduced, as all of those introductions could just spread easily downstream. So headwaters where if it starts in the headwaters,
you're
done. Now, you said Moraine Lake is also in the water preservation zone because it is planned location for restoration of West Slope cutthroat trout. That's a hard thing to say. I don't know why. West Slope
cutthroat
trout and bull trout restoration, and is currently free of any aquatic invasive species.
So they're going to use Moraine Lake to breed fish, to move into the other lakes once the other lakes are clear.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. We tested fish from Moraine Lake in 2025. All of them came back negative for whirling disease, she says. Preventing the introduction of aquatic invasive species to Moraine Lake will improve our ability to restore Moraine Lake and the watershed in the future for species at risk. Water recreation zone in Banff continue to allow most water-based activities such as swimming, playing in the beach toys, snorkeling, fishing, and paddling and large inflatables. In this zone, scuba diving is allowed only in Tujac Lake. I'm going to have to look into that scuba dive. I don't scuba dive, but it's just got me interested now. Like,
I know.
What are they?
Yeah.
Because most people, you're going, there's shipwrecks or there's
or something.
Coral reef or there's some, what's there to see?
I know, right?
Like it's the
like
bottom
here
of a mountain.
In Thousand Islands and that area on the St. Lawrence, it's very popular because there's a lot of shipwrecks mm-hmm. to dive into and check out. Or if you're going to go down south, you can, lots of fish species that you can see. It's very interesting, but you're going into the mountains to a lake to go scuba diving. It just, obviously it happens because they specifically mention it.
Specifically mentioning it.
So there must be enough people doing it that it's like, whoa, hang on.
What I did on my summer vacation, I went scuba diving in the Rocky Mountains. Yokey dokey.
It's very
next.
Peculiar.
it's just weird. Water bodies in the water recreation zone include
a whole bunch of
different lakes. There's like 15 lakes here. However, in all instances, Parks Canada officials say that watercraft and equipment must meet the so-called 48-hour clean, drain, dry requirements and must be certified with a mandatory self-certification permit. And if you are heading out that way with your boats and skip one of these. I know down in Oregon, remember we were talking about Oregon having that
just last week, I think we mentioned it.
Yeah. And some guy in a stand-up paddleboard didn't realize you had to get it done, and he missed all the stations.
Yeah.
And he was on the water.
He didn't have a sticker.
Somebody says, where's your sticker? And what are you talking? It was like $115 ticket. Mm-hmm.
Well, the ticket here for these incidents is coming up.
Yeah. We're asking that visitors take a couple of extra steps to plan ahead before recreating in water in Banff National Park. Visitors are going to have to know which zone a water body is in and respect the equipment restrictions in that zone.
Going to be a lot of signage, I assume.
You got to think at the beginning, if they want to really cut down on this quick, they got to have the signage up.
And they're going to nail people with these fines just to you need to nail people with fines to get so it gets in the news and people go, oh,
you hate to make an example, but in something like this, you got to make an example. The first case of whirling disease in Canada was recorded at Johnson Lake in Banff National Park in 2016. The lake was drained and all the fish were killed.
That's pretty drastic, but it's serious enough that you want to take the steps.
2023, whirling disease was discovered in non-native brook trout in Emerald Lake. First known case in Yoho National Park, but also in all the province of British Columbia. So that was just a couple of years back.
Yeah, and it's spreading. So it is spreading.
It was later discovered in Kicking Horse River, Wapta Lake, Finn Creek, Monarch Creek, and the confluence of the Emerald River and Kicking Horse River. Province of British Columbia has since discovered it in Kootenay Lake. Named for the circular swimming patterns of infected fish, the whirling disease can affect several fish species, including bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout, as well as rainbow trout, mountain whitefish, brown, and brook trout. All the fish that people go to the Rockies to catch.
Yeah.
Aquatic invasive species can have really harmful impacts on the ecosystem. They can outcompete native species. They can change the habitat to make it inhabitable to native species. Whirling disease is caused by a parasite that's originally from Europe and has caused mortality rates up to 90% in some fish populations. So we're really trying to protect these sensitive ecosystems. And with closures extending until March 31st, 2027 in Yoho Kootenay National Parks, Parks Canada reminds people that violators of the rules could face up to $25,000.
That's nothing.
So that's $115.
Yeah, I know.
Nothing.
Now, I imagine it'll be depending on the degree of your violation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're an outfitter and you bring a whole bunch of boats in, you're probably going to get be hit by the 25,000 rule. But if you're just some bozo with a paddleboard, you're probably going to get hit at like $2,000, $2,500 or something, right? But they're serious enough. This is like this is a serious risk to the local native species, so they want to send a message.
I mean,
they want to protect.
Wipe out an entire watershed with this.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I never got my boat cleaned.
Yeah.
That's just like the guys that started the forest fires down in California and that. Oh, it's just a little fire.
Oh, yeah, and Nova Scotia, too. People are like, oh, what? I'm just camping. I'm having a fire. You can't stop me.
Next thing you know.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. That's under the Canada National Parks Act that they'll get fined. Mm-hmm. Since 2023, we have been monitoring for whirling disease parasites in Yoho and Kootenay National Parks. We haven't had any new detections in Yoho since 2023, and we have not detected the parasite at all in Kootenay National Park. That's great news, and it's showing us that the restrictions are really helping to contain the spread of whirling disease. There has also been additional testing outside of the parks within British Columbia, and the distribution is still quite limited. Hmm. So what's the term? Nip it in the bud.
Exactly, and that's what they're doing.
That's what they're trying to do.
Being smart.
You know what? Like I say, when you're emptying a lake and killing all the fish,
right?
People are going to think that's drastic.
But it's necessary.
But, yeah, it's totally necessary.
I looked up the lake that they drained. It's right there off the Trans-Canada Highway. And it's a lake where it looks like a lot of people will be stopping at.
Yeah.
So maybe that was the point. It's like, you know what? This is a very popular lake. We have whirling disease in this lake. Let's just take it out and clean it up and kill all the fish and restock it later. And mm-hmm. so it's just one of those necessary evils. But there's a lot of lakes where you can't. If it's on a watershed, it's like you can't stop a watershed from flowing.
Well, and even Minnewanka, there's no way you could drain Minnewanka.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's a massive yes. lake.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even see anybody else on it when we were there.
Oh, yeah.
And we were there for a good couple of hours paddling around. And, no, it's such, I mean, you're paddling in the middle with mountains all around you. It's this gorgeous turquoise blue lake.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and you're just like, wow, this is just gorgeous. And, you know, people are there for different activities and, yep. and whatnot, paddling and, like you say, fishing and snorkeling and scuba diving and mm-hmm. know, that sort of stuff. And, yeah, you'd hate to see it just...
I imagine there was lessons learned from when they had the smelter up in Sudbury and you ended up with what they call Windex lakes. All these lakes turned... They look like... The liquid in Windex, yep. it was just this light blue because the lakes were so dead, there's no live anything in them, and the water just turned blue because there's nothing alive in the water. And you get all the acid rain and the burned rocks and so mm-hmm. on. And so they said, whew, we let this go way too long before we put the super stack in. And so this is what they're thinking of out west. It's like, take lessons learned from other disasters of native lakes and fish species. It's
yep.
this is serious. We have to jump on it ahead of time. And a lot of people are going to complain and
so let them complain.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a necessary evil to preserve what's out there.
Well, and realistically now, if I'm driving out there, I'm not bringing my boats anymore
mm-hmm.
because
exactly, yeah.
the restrictions now from yeah. out of province paddlers mm-hmm. has gotten so much. It's like, you know what? I'll just spend the money and rent something while I'm out there.
Yep.
Right. And, you know, I'd be a tad ticked off if I got all the way out there and found, oh, you can't paddle in those four spots you were looking mm-hmm. to paddle anymore.
And the risk, I think, isn't really... So a lot of people go, whoa, what about the fishermen? It's like, who cares about the fishermen? Fish are a feeder species for a lot of, like, birds mm-hmm. and otters and you name it. Like, a lot of wildlife feed on fish and small fish and roe and the frogs and so on. Like, there's... This is a level of the food pyramid for all the animals and the wildlife. It's like... Not food pyramid, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, food chain.
Food chain, that's it. That's the word I was looking for.
I'm there for you, buddy.
But seriously, it could affect various levels of, just like we see back in Yellowstone, when they reintroduced wolves, it brought back a healthy wildlife for like deer and so on. It's you need all these different mm-hmm. levels of animals populating the food chain. And so this is just one of those things. Sure, there's going to be a tourism value. People want to catch the fish. But if you kill off, and it's like they say, you know, what's going to happen when we lose all the bees and all the mosquitoes? It's going to be like, oh, I don't like mosquitoes anyways. Yeah, but it feeds a lot of birds and other right. animals. It's necessary in yeah. the food chain.
So if it means that you got to take a couple years off from fishing so that you can then enjoy the rest of
yeah.
your 60 years of fishing, so be it.
Yeah.
Like I say, I would be ticked off if I was going out there specifically to do that and then found out when I got out there,
yeah.
oh, you can't paddle here, 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 and here.
I know, right?
But yeah. if I know why, okay, well, then you got to start thinking about it
yeah.
too, right?
It's the bigger picture. You need to see the big picture.
Get past the frustration and the
yeah.
and to the real. And that's where education is going to come in big time.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't just tell people, take your boat, piss off.
Yeah.
Because here's why you yeah. can't go paddle.
Exactly.
You know, there's here's the effects. And here's what's going to happen. And here's going to be the outcome. And if we allow it, and here's going to be the outcome if we don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You got to get the education in there as well. Hopefully they do all that. And like I say, they sort of got a handle on it where they're in the right direction, they're yeah. saying. So,
yeah.
Hopefully it works out.
I hope so. Yeah, with luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because little Bobby wanting to use his inflatable unicorn is going to end up resulting in a crash in the population of hawks, eagles, and so on. And it's like, oh.
They didn't say anything about the giant inflatable flamingos, though. Those are okay, apparently. I want clarification.
When I was reading it, I was making notes. I'm like, inflatable unicorn. That's very oddly specific.
Right? This means you, Jim. Was that aimed at me? How long ago were you in school? How long ago were you 15?
Forever ago.
Forever ago. Youth from across the Columbia Basin, and we're staying out BC way, have a unique opportunity to be immersed in the local watershed while earning 4 credits towards high school graduation this summer.
Nice.
Wild Sights Columbia River Field School, CRFS, is a learning adventure for students age 15 to 18. Students paddle key sections of Upper Columbia River and camp alongside its riverbanks in a learning environment unlike any other. That's not really school. The field school provides an opportunity for learning that is real, lived, and felt, says Wild Sight Education Director Monica Neeson. Students come away with an understanding of the complexity of many issues, ecological, social, and economic, that are inextricably linked to the Columbia River and its watershed. Spanning 15 days, field school participants meet with a diverse group of guest speakers, including government officials, indigenous knowledge holders, scientists, artists, and adventurers. They earn recreational Canoe Association of BC certifications while gaining important outdoor skills like reading maps, packing, cooking, setting up camp, and leave no trace practices. But most importantly, students gain an appreciation for this watershed and the intricate role we all play in its protection. And that's going to become more and more important as we go along as a species. You know, I mean, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, they really didn't, it wasn't a thing.
No, it wasn't.
And now as I get older, you know, and my kids are getting older, and then the next generation comes along, and this is going to be more of a thing. They're going to be more environmentally conscious.
Before there wasn't enough of us to do too much of a problem, but now there's just too many of us.
Well, and the fact that if they're bringing all the younger kids and generations up, talking about climate change and environmental and ecological, then that's going to become more of a norm for them than it ever was for us.
Exactly.
You know?
And there's more. And as you introduce it at a younger and younger age, a lot of people go, oh, you're brainwashing. No, it's like, this is our planet. This is our future. And without it, like, future generations are going to have it that much harder.
Yeah.
So we need to teach people at a younger age so that they can respect the environment and so on. It's I don't know. I don't want to get on a soapbox or anything, but it's important that people realize what's at stake.
Well, funny. I got a soapbox right here for you, buddy. No, you know what? To me, it's when I look at it, it's like back in the day, satellites weren't a common. And to us, satellites, we all know what satellites do and what they're capable of doing and how many are up there and what they're doing and all that sort of stuff. And this is like, you know, okay, climate change. What's climate? You know, so 30 years from now, these kids are good. Climate change, know all about climate change.
Yeah, we know exactly. You know,
or we know all about how the health of a river is dictated and stuff like that, right? Liz Payne, a 2025 participant from Caslow, BC, said she took away not only knowledge but also a sense of empowerment. I'm leaving here knowing there are ways I can contribute and make this area better. This trip was extremely eye-opening and incredible. The program aims to equip students with a strong understanding of the Columbia River system, including the Columbia River Treaty, and the ways the river shapes communities throughout the watershed. Building a meaningful relationship with the environment starts with knowledge and lived experience, says Wild Sight Program Coordinator Graham Lee Rollins. Through the Columbia River Field School, students explore the history, science, and policy that shape the basin today. By learning directly in the landscape and from people connected to it, participants gain the context and critical thinking skills needed to engage thoughtfully with issues that affect their communities. Past participants hailing from 16 communities across the basin have gone on to speak at conferences publish original writing, participate in youth summits, and become local leaders in their own communities. Many alumni are now pursuing careers in environmental sciences, studies, outdoor education, and other conservation-related fields. This sounds pretty cool, and this goes back to what we've been saying for like 10 years now.
Yeah.
How come that wasn't an option yeah. when we went to school?
And you're seeing people come out of this program and move on to, they're creating careers for themselves using right? this experience.
This year's Columbia River Field School runs from July 4th to 18th. Applications are due March 29th, so a couple weeks from now. For more information, go and to apply, visit wildsite.ca/fieldschool. You can get your... read more about it, and if it's for you, throw an application in there and go do some learning on the river.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. I'm still annoyed that colleges have a kayak fishing team.
I know.
And how long ago was that?
Yeah, you're on scholarship.
A scholarship. But no, to do stuff like this,
yeah,
you know, like that, that's just cool. I don't care how you say it. That's just cool. Have you ever heard of the kayaking's 120 rule?
I have a beef with this story. Not too many people are going to get it.
Uh-oh.
Who uses Fahrenheit? One country.
But I think when this came out, that's...
Sure.
Everybody was using it at that point. Anyway, just because Derek's going to get on another soapbox. Hang on, Derek. Let me pull this soapbox out, too. This is a different one.
I did a bunch of math and conversions today on this.
Oh, did you? Oh, you were mathicating.
Yes.
Wow.
So it's really, it's the 49 degree Celsius rule. The okay. 49 rule.
It's the kayak's 120 rule, but for the rest of the world, it's the kayak 49 rule. And it's not only for kayaking anymore.
Because well, it's also inaccurate.
It's all paddling.
Yes, it's all paddling.
Anyway, it's become controversial.
Absolutely, as it should be.
Kayaking is among the sports that has been on the rise over the past decade. Honestly, I've never heard of this 120 rule till I came across this. Ever-increasing numbers of people joining the paddling community, enjoying everything from physical activity to serene surroundings. And that's why we go. Serene surroundings, not the physical activity.
Yeah.
Regardless of your reasons for kayaking or your experience level in the sport, there are a few simple rules to keep in mind on your next kayaking adventure. One of them is kayaking's 120 rule for cold water paddling. Or is it? The long-standing rule, designed as a simple formula to help keep kayakers safe, has become a bit controversial. More and more experts say following this rule to the letter will not only fail to keep you safe, it can also leave you woefully unprepared for disaster. So basically, the rule of 120 was created to help kayakers know when to safely dress or how to safely dress when spending their day on the water. Unlike hiking, where you decide what to wear on a winter hike based on the air temperature, wind, and precipitation, kayaking has an additional element to consider: water. The 120 rule, or rule of 120, sought to take the guesswork out of decision with a basic mathematical formula combining air and water temperature. According to the rule, if you add water temperature to air temperature and it equals 120 degrees Fahrenheit or
49 degrees Celsius.
Thank you. You can do without your cold weather gear. While that can indeed be true in some instances, many expert kayakers have begun pointing out the flaw in this equation. If there is a great disparity between the air and water temperature, such as 80 degree air temp combined with 40 degree water reading, you will still need your cold weather gear to survive if you happen to end up in the water. And see, part of that is why I think I've never heard of this rule, because I don't believe in it.
Oh,
if
no.
I know that water is
that cold,
then yeah. I'm going to sit in my dry suit, with all my nice warm stuff underneath and sweat my bahookie off.
Yeah.
Because, like, this week there's been a couple of days where I'm walking out in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
But that water, if I was on the water.
It's ice cold.
Yeah, hypothermia, baby. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when I used to recreate out in Vancouver Island, like, didn't matter what you were doing, it's like the ocean temperature and the Strait of Juan de Fuca and so on, it's generally about 3, 4, 5 degrees mm-hmm. year round. It's ocean temperature water. So it's like, oh, good. If I use the 120 rule and it's 35 degrees Celsius, I can just go and jump in the water. It won't matter. No, it matters a lot.
It matters.
Because when you're talking 35 degree water or 3 or 4 degrees Celsius water, which it normally is, it's like, that doesn't mean it's like, oh well, you know, today's gonna be a warm day. It's like, I don't know, hey, if
but that if, water was refreshing, wasn't it, for the first
air temperature was so hot that it could boil water in the air, that means I could go swimming when it was minus 10 degree water.
Exactly. Opponents warning of flaws in the rule of 120 say it can give paddlers a false sense of security and lead to not being properly prepared for the condition that matters most, cold water. In the above scenario, if you were dressing for the 80 degree air temperature, you will likely be in shorts and a t-shirt or other lightweight clothing.
And however, greatly at risk.
Yeah. Should you end up in the water, which happens even to the expert paddlers, it takes just a matter of moments before you're rendered debilitated in water that cold. In fact, it's possible for hypothermia to kick in even in waters as warm as 50 degrees Fahrenheit, given enough time. Even if you're wearing a life jacket and know what to do if you capsize, you can easily succumb to cold water if help isn't close at hand. Simple solution may be to not go paddling during the coldest months. I says pardon. However, even through spring and summer are known as paddling season, spring can put kayakers at the most risk of cold water immersion. This is because air temperatures are rising much faster than water temperatures, leading to a false sense of security, whether following the 120 rule or not. This is one of the hidden dangers of kayaking. To ensure you're properly prepared, focus on the cold water temperatures. Basically, that means dress as if you are going in the water, which is exactly what I do.
Yes, absolutely.
And every time I'm in my dry suit, like, I tend to walk out in it.
Yeah.
Usually at the end. So I know, yeah, see, what I have on is keeping me warm.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be in there for 10 minutes where I should have had hypothermia by now, but I'm still nice and toasty in here, so I'm doing that right.
Yeah.
In addition to always wearing a life jacket, wear proper immersion gear such as a wet or dry suit based on water temperature. Experts stress this means you must be wearing the thermal protection, not just have it on board, as you can end up unexpectedly in the water in an instant. And having put on that dry suit so many times, if you think you're going to have it in the boat and as you tip, you're going to try to put that on?
Yeah.
You think again.
Exactly.
That ain't happening. You'll be lucky to get 1 foot in
And if I'm tripping early season, I always take that in consideration. So it's ice out, the water's still frigidly cold. I'm going to be nervous crossing a lake, and I will generally stay very close to shore so that I'm within 10, 15 feet of shore where I'm paddling. It may take longer to cross a lake, but I stay close to shore.
If something happens,
I need to get ashore quickly and dry off, right?
Yep. Yeah, before, you know, the whole dry suit thing became the big issue, back when I first started doing my canoe tripping and stuff like that, we would go on early spring trips and late fall trips where if you went in, you're freezing your butt off.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yep. You know, and if you're backcountry camping, canoeing, you tend not to, like, unless it's a whitewater trip, you tend not to wear a dry suit.
Mm-hmm. Not back then. A lot of more people do nowadays, but still there's people that you just can't afford a dry suit.
True. There's that
so,
too.
Yeah, like I say, if I was out there, it's you're 10 feet off water, you're making sure you're not ramming the rocks coming up, and you got more of that sort of issue, but
more cautious.
If you do go over, you're just a few strokes from,
exactly,
from shore,
yeah,
and getting out. And at that close, chances are you're grabbing some gear with you and, you know, getting that fire started, getting out of your wet clothes, that sort of deal, right?
Yeah.
And the majority of times you're not by yourself either. Late.
Generally not. Early. No.
Yeah.
And so it's another one of those things. It's like, okay, it's really cold water. I'm going to make sure I stay close to shore. Make sure I have my life jacket on, because mm-hmm. you can't control what your body does in really cold temperatures. And so you want that safety factor of having a life jacket on. And so it's just one of those things. I'm always a lot more cautious and nervous in really cold weather. It's like, oh, it's going to take a long time to circle that bay. But you know what? It's like there's ice forming. It's starting to snow. I don't want to get out in the too deep into the water if something yep. happens. And who knows, right? So.
Yep. You got to use your brain.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I say, now it's like if it's early, and ice has just come out, or, yeah. you know, it's New Year's Eve and I'm out there paddling. Yeah, I've got that dry suit on, yeah. or I'm not going out.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this is one rule I won't follow is the 120 rule.
Yeah, it just
doesn't make sense.
It has a specific use.
Yeah.
Well, mostly because it's in Fahrenheit.
Please excuse Derek while he has a hissy fit. For our friends over in England.
Yes.
If you have a passion for paddling and want to help shape the future direction of travel, the new Paddle England Assembly presents an opportunity to influence at a national level.
This is interesting.
We are looking for individuals who are thoughtful, open-minded, and passionate about the future of paddling. You do not need to hold a formal position or title. What matters most is your perspective, your experience, and your willingness to contribute constructively. Serving on the new Paddle England Assembly is a unique opportunity to play an active role in shaping the future. Members recruited will contribute their skills and experience to national discussions, connect with a broad cross-section of the paddling community, help ensure paddling remains inclusive, progressive, and community-led. Membership of the assembly will be drawn from different paddling communities, helping to ensure diversity of thought, challenge, and innovation. This approach supports more inclusive, informed, and effective development of paddling opportunities across England. By bringing together voices from different disciplines, backgrounds, and communities, the assembly will help ensure diverse experiences are heard and valued, encourage healthy debate and fresh thinking, support more inclusive and informed decision-making, and help shape priorities and future plans for paddling in England. We will be recruiting up to 12 members to form the assembly, drawn from across the paddling spectrum, including competition paddlers, recreational paddlers, including at least one member under the age of 18, delivery partners and uniformed groups, and independent paddlers. The creation of the Paddle England Assembly was agreed as part of the constitutional review completed in November 2024. It is an important step in strengthening how paddling is shaped, supported, and developed across England. There are similar bodies in place in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. Application closing date is the 20th of April, 2026. So you still have a good month and a few days to get an application in. If you go to paddleuk.org.uk, there's a little search bar. Search for Paddle England Assembly, and there'll be more info and link to the application if you're interested.
It's very interesting, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of developing where they want to push the sport or push the discipline over the next several decades, right? And
yeah.
how they want it to grow.
Yep. Yeah, you know, like, I mean, you can do all willy-nilly. People just want to do it or whatever, and mm-hmm. everybody's doing their own thing. But to have an assembly of all these different voices
yes.
coming together.
It'll help governments, it'll help England plan where they're going to direct their energies and money mm-hmm. and so on, if they can see that they can develop a path or a course. And this will help, the diversity of how it'll help will be like certain clubs and certain events, certain benefits, certain like the Olympics and so on. It's just, it's going to be a diverse, broad spectrum development of all paddle sport.
Yeah, so it's not just all the recreational paddle. It's,
yeah, yeah.
You know, everyday Joe just going out and paddling and having yeah. all the say. The athletes are going to have a say, and they're going to have the say. The
exactly.
recreational paddler is going to have a say, which is perfect.
So it'll help them decide, okay, well, we're going to put some sponsorships between under these specific races and events that happen every year, and we're going to help develop younger crowds. You get more youth into it, get more people interested in it. Mm-hmm. And it's a reasonable, healthy way to help develop the sport of paddling, whether it's kayak or canoe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And I like the including at least one member under the age of 18.
Exactly, yeah.
Get the youth perspective, too. Because you don't want it just to be all old people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
That, well, you want to hear from the 60-year-olds.
Yeah, all the 60-year-olds that are going, yeah, get off my river! Waving their fist at people yeah, paddling yeah. by. You know, so yeah, go check that out, paddleuk.org.uk, and search for Paddle England Assembly if you're interested in finding out more. So we talked about Lake Burley Griffin, the Canberra Balloon Spectacular last year.
Mm-hmm.
There was the one balloon guy that throws a rope out.
And tows people.
And tows the kayakers.
Yeah.
Well, 'tis the time of year again.
Yes.
Where this
with
balloon
some changes.
Festival. With some changes.
Now, it's a contact sport, not a towing sport.
Right. Two Canberrans, hoping for the perfect photo at the opening of the Canberra Balloon Spectacular, ended up taking an unexpected swim in the Lake Burley Griffin on Saturday morning. Eric Vu and William Lamb were among hundreds of people who paddled out in kayaks and small boats to watch more than 40 balloons float across the water for the first day of the 2026 festival. Because they come down really low to the water, right?
Yes.
In the front row view took a literal turn when a descending balloon clipped their kayak and tipped it over. Pair had launched from the wharf near the National Museum of Australia, which they have done several times in previous festivals. It was very busy. There were hundreds of boats, Eric says. Saturday, William was sitting on the front of the kayak while Eric was at the stern when they spotted a balloon approaching. We were taking a selfie, looking back at the hot air balloons, and then when we turned back, we saw this one was coming for us.
Whoa.
Coming for us or at us? It looked good, so we tried to stay there as long as possible to get a photo, expecting it to fly over us. But then it descended faster than we expected, and I said, whoops, too late to move.
It's not passing over. It's
moments later, the balloon basket collided with the side of the kayak, knocked the pair into the lake. Everyone rushed over to help and asked if we could swim and offered to hold our paddles and phones while we got back on, Eric says.
Interesting point there is, hey, you guys swim? They probably didn't have life jackets on.
That's, yeah, they don't say that, but...
But they, yeah. It's alluded to. Hey, you guys can swim?
Festival Flight Director John Wallington said the fact that balloons and watercraft can get so close is precisely what makes the event so special. Interaction between balloons and small watercraft of all types is unique in the world to the Canberra Balloon Spectacular, he says. Everyone is having a great time, but on Saturday morning, there was perhaps a little too much enthusiasm for getting close to each other.
Get those kayakers!
I thought you were going to move! I thought you were going to go up! Balloons will only be that low over the water if they are moving really slowly. The contact could perhaps be likened to a little car park bingle. Learn new words all the time. It's a bingle. Oh, yeah, I was in a little bingle. Except nothing was damaged at all. I understand even the kayaker's mobile phone camera survived the brief dunking with no consequences. Despite their unexpected dip, Eric says that the experience hasn't put them off. The Canberra Balloon Spectacular is Australia's longest-running hot air balloon festival. balloons towing boats were not allowed this year.
Yes.
They're not saying why, but from the articles and stories we'd heard and read,
it was a fun thing to do.
People loved it.
Yeah.
Like they would be lining up trying to grab that rope to get towed.
Might have become a liability thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, for us to run it, we can't be towing people. Our insurance provider said, hey, none of this.
Or maybe there's too many people hanging off of it and the balloon can't.
It drags the balloon down into the water.
It right under.
We're at risk of sinking this balloon.
At what point does the balloon become a submarine?
Yes, well, it was almost in this case. They took out a kayaker by direct contact.
Yeah. Hmm.
It sounds like a blast. I'd love to go to it and see it.
And you've got to think, from the balloon guy's point of view,
yeah,
was there a couple of guys in there after that champagne breakfast going, hey, bitch, can't hit him. I'm not going to hit him. Chicken? I'm not chicken. It's Australia after all, okay?
Here, hold my champagne.
And if you want to go with stereotypes, you know that's what happened in that balloon basket.
Yeah. How close can we get?
How close? Come on.
Let's get our feet wet.
Come on. Do it. Do it.
Let's get water in the basket.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'd just love to hear that little, oops.
Whoop. We got him.
Yeah, somebody's going to get a talking to.
We'll teach him to do selfies on the water.
Oops. Nobody was hurt, so that's a good outcome.
Yeah. Yeah, and now next year it's going to be a ban on direct contact with kayakers.
Yeah, you've got to
can't
be at
tow
least
them or hit them.
No towing.
Do not
no
land
hitting
on people.
But there's not a rule yet that says you can't throw things at them.
There you go.
Dropping things up. Yeah, now if somebody's listening to this, they're going to bring that up next year. Yeah, we heard this thing on their podcast. Let's just take it into advisement that we also put the rule in, you are not allowed to throw things out of the balloon on top of boaters.
Their ballast on hot air balloons are sandbags.
Right?
It's like no hitting canoeists or paddlers with sandbags.
Right? You go up with 7 sandbags, you come down with 7 sandbags.
Well, no, you can drop your sandbags. That's an emergency measure. It's like, oh, we're going to hit something. Drop sandbags, drop ballast, and lift up.
Hit a kayak. They should have dropped the ballast on the kayak to make it go underwater exactly, so they would clear it. Your argument is null and void.
Here, catch.
It's a full contact sport. Tag, you're it.
Yeah, paintball from the basket.
I think this is the last thing I've got here. I sent an email.
Did you?
I did. I know how. I sent an email to Parks Canada about lock and paddle. And I got an automatic reply with some good info. Tension. We are currently seeing a rise in water levels across the system. We are actively managing the waterway to help balance the impacts. It is important to note that regardless of specific location, water levels are expected to remain high and are subject to fluctuation as a result of forecasted precipitation, temperature, and melting snow throughout the Trent Severn waterway system. Activities on or near the water and around locks and dams remains hazardous and are not recommended at this time. If you're experiencing high water in your area, your email will be provided to our water management team, and we will respond as soon as possible. Please note that we are monitoring water levels 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and our operations crews are active. If you're in immediate danger, please dial 911.
Yeah, don't call us. Call 911.
I was waiting for a response from the email. For the latest flood watches and warnings in your area, please contact your local conservation authority or the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources. For flood mitigation support like sandbags, please contact your municipal office. For 24/7 access to water level information and updates, visit the Trent Severn Waterway Management InfoNet at www.pc.gc.ca/Trent. Emails and phone lines will be monitored daily during this time, including weekends and holidays. General information, if your inquiries regarding trip planning or general information, please be advised that responses will be delayed, and we thank you for your understanding. Yeah, probably because they need to concentrate more on floods and high water.
Yes, exactly.
For information about Canada Strong Pass, the Canada Strong Pass is a federal government initiative offering free and discounted access to cultural and natural destinations across Canada from June 19th to September 7th, 2026. For Parks Canada Ontario Waterways, this means free lockage for all vessels on the Trent Severn Waterway, including access through the Murray Canal, and 25% off Parks Canada administered camping and overnight accommodations. Mooring and all other services such as shore power and products like nautical charts are not discounted. In the meantime, if you have general questions about our hours of operation, fees, permits, water management, or trip planning, we invite you to visit our website. And don't forget to like and follow us on social media at Trent Severn NHS.
That's awesome. So they did that last year. Mm-hmm. We took advantage ourselves of the pass, and we did quite a few things that was either greatly discounted or free. And so they're doing it again this year, and it's great. It encourages people to be a tourist in your own country and so on. So it is helpful. It does make a difference, and I'm glad they're doing it again.
Well, all that information
was just a bounce back email.
Just a bounce back auto reply email. Answered none of my questions.
No, but it's brilliant. They're answering questions you didn't even know you had.
I still didn't know I had these questions. A lot of good information in it.
Yes.
But I had actually sent them an email about lock and paddle.
Yes.
Because when you go onto the system, there still isn't a date for Peterborough and Ottawa lock and paddle. Yeah. And usually it coordinates with Parks Canada Day or Canada Parks Day.
Parks Day or is it? Yes.
Yeah, Canada Parks Day, which is July 18th. But Lachine, Montreal, has their lock and paddle announced for July 11th, the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sent them a nice email going, hey,
how are you guys doing?
Are they
this?
Doing something on their own? Or is it a typo? Or is everybody doing a separate week? Which would be cool because then you can do all three of them,
yeah.
Right? We've done the Peterborough one. I've done the Ottawa one last year. And we were thinking about doing the Lachine one this year. I sent all that. Haven't received a reply other than all these questions I didn't have.
Yes.
So, I'm waiting to find out whether, maybe Lachine just, got the wrong weekend.
Yeah, who knows?
Or maybe they are doing the week before.
Yeah, they don't want to face the competition of Ottawa.
Well, that's what, when you see the pictures from the one in Montreal there, Lachine Canal, it wasn't a ton of people. Of course, Peterborough is the biggest one.
Yeah.
Right? And then Ottawa was pretty packed. And then the Lachine was, it's growing.
Yeah.
So maybe they are doing it the week before so that people from Ottawa can go and then they can do the Ottawa one the following weekend or I don't know. So anyway, I don't know if they're all going to do it on the 11th of July or the 18th of July or
who knows?
Who knows? But it's not on the website. So I sent an email and said, hey, I'm Sean from Paddling Adventures Radio. Our listeners want to know.
Yes.
Okay, they don't. I want to know. I got plans to make. So when we know,
When we know, you'll know.
Yes. Outdoor shows, Canucopia was last weekend.
We're coming down to the last few here.
This weekend is the Outdoor Adventure Show in Calgary. March 28th, 29th is the one in Montreal. Outdooradventureshow.ca for info on both these locations. Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to 26th. That's coming up next month. That's like a month away. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking, outdoor gear and equipment and paddlecraft. AdventureOttawa.ca for more info. And as I say, with the lock and paddle, when we find out for sure the date, So you're going to be either the 11th or 18th of July.
Yes, one or the other. It's going to be one or the other.
So
most likely the 18th.
Hmm. The other thing I'd thought about was going to Kingston on July 1st and paddling up the Rideau Canal and arriving in Ottawa on, but that was the, if it was on the 11th.
Yeah.
But if it was on the 18th, I could leave the 11th, take that week off and paddle up and get there for the 18th in time for lock and paddle in Ottawa.
Interesting.
Right?
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Can you hear the wheels going?
Yes. I'm trying to think of what I'm doing at that time.
Water skiing. Behind a very fast canoe. Yeah, so I'll look into that. Anyway, like I say, that's the only one I'm waiting for because I got plans to make. That'd be a pretty cool trip, Lilo.
Yeah.
If you could time it to arrive, you know, you're paddling in the lock, you're ending your trip at the lock and paddle. That'd be kind of cool.
I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing that week, but I think I'm busy.
Oh, getting a haircut.
Yes.
I'm getting a perm. All right. Well, that's all I've got.
I've got nothing to add.
You've got to get Boogie in here. And,
I know. The snow's come down pretty heavy.
Go partake of the last blizzard of the season. Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, I think that's about it.
That's it.
Like I say, we took advantage of the weekend of not paddling, went out and did some black and white photography experimentation and a couple of cool little things came out of it and some photos and whatnot.
And we came in just around a tight 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Not bad. 105 by the time we're done rambling here.
Right? I could ramble forever if you wanted. Because was born a rambling man. Alrighty, well, if you want to find out more about us, you could find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.